I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. You'll hear now about a traveling salesman, this isn't the start of a joke, rather, about a Vancouverite who travels the province peddling books, his stock and trade books about British Columbia, specifically First Nations books. I saw his ad about a month ago in the most recent edition of BC Book World, and seeking a particular book on Duff Patullo, I wrote him. He invited me to view his collection last week. It's housed in a few storage lockers here in Vancouver, and numbers in the tens of thousands of books. He's curated an amazing collection, histories of this place and its peoples that have a number of rare finds. David Ellis joins me now, and I'll get him to tell us about his work, where it takes him, and all the books. The collection today, numbering some 75,000 books, began with David's father, Bill, who sold books from Haida Gwaii. David's own background includes a master's degree in natural resource management. We'll also discuss David's plans for this collection and where he'd like to see it in the future. You can email David at davidellis@lightspeed.ca. Please welcome to the Plant Online program in person today, David Ellis. Mr. Ellis, good morning.
Hi, Joe. I'm glad to be here.
Thanks for coming in to do this. I appreciate it. So this collection, I went to go see it last week. Numbers in the tens of thousands. Is there a number? I said 75,000 in the introduction. I've read 50, 60, 100,000 in other news reports.
Well, my focus for the book business now, it's going to be into a corporation now. First Nations Libraries Limited is First Nations. So I'm going to be getting rid of a lot of street stock and only focusing on the rarest First Nation books that fit into this category of rare and wanted cultural or language books. So we're going to do an inventory soon. I have it all carefully inventoried by culture and region and language, by First Nation. So I've got, if you like, say, Haida, Coast Salish, there's 50 of those culture language groups, and I've got complete sets of books now. I'm very tired after building it up for each of those 50 groups or cultures. The languages overlap a bit, but basically if you want Tanaha, Kootenai, people's books, I now have all the books about they and Taltan and so on. That's what I'm shooting for. Not volume, but quality.
Yeah. And so the people that seek you, I mean, I'm sure they're not just like me that buy books because they want to collect them or are interested in reading, say. They serve a practical purpose, a legal purpose in some cases, right?
Right. So, actually, I've gone to the people over the last 23 years I've been out visiting. I visited altogether now. I figured it out the other day. I couldn't believe it. 251 First Nations. So that's in British Columbia we have just over 200, and then we've got the Yukon, the Northwest Territories, where I can drive to, much of Alberta, and those I've gone to visit, 251 First Nation bands, if you want, by the federal affairs designation, and I've had a wonderful time. I just can't explain what a thrilling job this is to drive through the wilds of BC and often go for miles up dirt roads, often in the city, and knock on the door of the First Nation. I make an appointment with them, hopefully with their education department, as the books are for cultural use and education, for proof of claim now, since the Chilcotin decision. There's a big focus to getting what the judges want, which is proving who you are and where you are, and that demands all the books. And then the linguistic material, what little there is, I always have that because it's a struggle to keep these languages are in rough shape and there's not supported by the federal government. So I go there and support them with my little box of whatever I can find on Kwakwaka'wakw. I was just up to Alert Bay and I was just this morning looking through Franz Boas's book and his summary of the Kwakwaka'wakw language. So it's quite a deep to approach these First Nations is a huge job. Because they're complicated. Everyone is complicated. But I'll tell you, it's the best job in the world.
Yeah, and so these books that they buy from you, are these things that they just didn't have before?
Well, there's many things that are quite obscure, that are hard to find, that are out of print. As you know, as a collector, as I look around this room at your terrific collection here, Joe, and every book has a story. Every book is in print, as you know, for a certain amount of time, maybe not that long, before the publisher says, oh, heck, we're not selling anymore, let's remainder it. So then it becomes out of print, and then it goes into a certain number of basements, a certain number get wet, a certain number are thrown out or lost. Certain number are going into libraries, and if they're not used, they're turfed out of the library, because the high real estate values now have made library space a problem. And yeah. Everywhere you go, they get scarcer and scarcer. If a book is reprinted, like Mark Twain's books are always in print, but British Columbia is a tiny place, a tiny bunch of people spread over, and these are the scarcest of the BC books. You take a book about the Tsawwassen First Nation, and there's very few, that becomes nobody can find it. And my job is to find it wherever I can, which is another job we'll talk about, sourcing these books, and then taking it there for whoever would like it. And it's not a huge market for each book, so you have to seek it out. It's a special kind of business.
Yeah, so when you go to a specific area, the books that you'll bring when you go to these communities and talk to these folks would be, say, specific to that area?
Yeah, tomorrow, Monday, I'm going to Kwantlen First Nations. That's at Langley. And there's a lot of books for that area. Not much about them, but I have the books that feature their elders and their history. But there's a lot of books about Fort Langley and the over-pitched historical view of the fur trade and all this stuff, and the first white guys that came in, and so I'm going to have a lot of stuff which is peripheral to what they want, and I'll have some stuff they'll really want. I'll have some language books on the Hukumilam language and the Nooksack connection. All the tribes are connected, you know, and so I'll just try and help them, and I think I'll have a few things that they'll want, and I'll leave the books there and write an invoice up, and hopefully they'll, you know, the trouble with First Nations is they got severely, underfunded in the Harper era. As a matter of fact, $1.4 billion was written off the books and never delivered to them on the school end of it. Anyway, it's coming through now, I hope, and the help they get from the federal government will help them buy these libraries. And I've sold to Nisga Group when they obtained a treaty. I was there when they opened up their Lism's government libraries, expanded their school libraries, and expanded their museum libraries. So I was right there for them, and I gave them a lot of help when they were ready exact that time to do it, you know.
Yeah, and that's the rewarding part, isn't it? You've talked about how much you enjoy the job, but, I mean, the rewarding part is giving people their history. I mean, there was an article that I read, I don't know if it was in Marshall Lederman's piece in the Globe and Mail or in the BC Book World piece on you, about how people will look at these books and see an obscure photograph of the relative, say.
That's when I'm doing my job, I do that. I said, oh, that's my uncle, that's my grandfather. And I can usually do that. I have enough books now. I've been at this 23 years. So I've collected, and I've been roaming the province. I'm a book hound like you, in every shop. I buy most of these books, by the way, from other booksellers, mainly because they're the ones who bring them together in one spot. I buy some off the internet. I buy some from publishers, although I try not to do that because then I'm competing with a market where they already have the book. And all other obscure places you can possibly imagine in the course of a day that I can visit to find an old book. If I find a book about Kwantlen First Nations in Prince George, I put it in the Kwantlen area of my storage that you saw. Mm-hmm. And then tomorrow, I'm finally taking, this is my first appointment with Kwantlen First Nation, so I'm very excited, and I think they are too. They're going to have an opening ceremony with some singing and some Stolo cultural things, which is going to be a really cool event. Like, this is also a community kind of a business. I'm participating with them in cultural rebirth, language support and possible rebirth, although the problem there is that don't get enough fun. I'm quite an advocate for the First Nations, and I don't hide it. I've learned where they're lacking in funding and support, I strongly support them, because I feel that's, I don't need so much time to do so many things that you want to do, and that makes me feel good, and I like doing it. And so, anyway, language, and what we'll have too is the old journals. There's a book by John Work, an old Hudson Bay journal, and he was one of the earliest traders on the coast. He went around on a sailing boat, and that boat couldn't quite get up to Langley, so they used to the last part, they used to go on the open, the rowboats, or up the trail behind the Semiahmoo Trail. So I'll have that with me. That's a really interesting old journal. And I'll also be visiting the Fort Langley Historic Site, where Mike Starr I've known for years, and I've supplied him a few harder-to-find fur trade journals. So that's one of my sidelines, is Parks Canada, libraries, regional libraries, more rather than now, because their budgets are going down too. And I'll try and see the other First Nations in that area if I can. I'm just trying to get an appointment with the other ones. Sumas, I work with them. I supplied them on books on Ulican, which they're working hard at. Yeah. And they're working hard on the... Everybody has a local issue, eh?
Yeah.
They want to get the Ulican to recover now, and I do a lot of work. And I even write a few letters to Ottawa, and that just makes... Because I know enough people, and I can see the need to do that, and I am an advocate for the fish quite often.
Yeah, now, the collection of books itself, the core, the number I read somewhere was 23,000. That was begun by your father, Bill Ellis, is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, and so was his work much like what you do today?
Similar. My dad, in the last 20 years, had an out-of-print part of his business. He also sold wholesale businesses to stores. Those were in-print books. It was quite a large chunk of his business was stocking small First Nations bookshops, like in different places, like... smaller shops on First Nations land throughout BC.
Mm-hmm.
And he also, then he developed the out-of-print, especially for Haida, for Tlingit, where he used to visit his boat up in southeast Alaska. He used to travel up to his boat for Tsimshian and Fort Rupert, for Prince Rupert area. And he had a boat which he traveled with, a book boat. And then he, for a certain amount, he drove the Alaska Highway a lot and had good accounts there from his print business. He was in the print business for 20 years before that, and he actually was Bill Reed's art agent as a sideline, and he was the sort of PR man and support for Bill. He got Bill, he said, you should make prints, Bill. There's more money in that. Bill, the first one got to know him, was doing gold. Gold's expensive to buy. It's slow to do, and Bill was struggling financially. So my dad, being from the advertising business, said, come on, we've got to get with the public relations here. And he helped Bill Reed in a lot of ways. And Bill Reed, of course, was extremely good at the interview like this. And at and he soared. He went way up to the world renown.
So your father, Bill, he lived on Haida Gwaii?
Yes, the last 20 years of his life he lived up there.
Yeah, and so he foresaw the decline in bookstores, I guess, didn't he?
Yes, well... I think that's about over. But yeah, in his time, the internet was starting up and bookstores were going down. They've come down to about a low now. Again, real estate's a big problem for the rent. It's hard to recycle 100,000 things to a million people. Like if you're smart, you like McDonald's or something, you have about 40 products you sell to a million people, then you can hire people. This is a knowledge-based business. It's very hard to hire people to even be an assistant at a bookshop because you need a PhD pretty much. So what's happened to the bookstores is that they just can't pay the rent. He used to say rent kills bookstores. There's a few left in Vancouver. However, I think the tide's turned. People are getting a bit bored with all their internet, trying to read a book on the internet, which you can do, but it gets kind of tiring. It's not too exciting. If you have a nice smelly old book in front of you, the pages and it's torn with old names on it, the book itself's telling you a story, especially the old First Nations books, like the books by Boas or Swanton. They're very much wanted by the First Nations because the history of that book and how they came to be is part of the history they want to talk about now, with Boas and Swanton and Barnett and other ethnographers who did many of these books.
Yeah, and so since you inherited these books from your father, you've built it up twice and three times almost, right?
Oh, way larger.
Yeah.
Well, my dad had the Haida, and he had a mail order business to all over BC. And then, as it were, was, I brought down a van full of books. What I got from my dad was the chutzpah and the idea of this idea. And the idea that it can be expanded. Actually, it could be expanded worldwide, but first of all, nationwide. I've got it as far as half BC, Alberta, Yukon, half of Calgary. But I'm 65 and running out of time. So if a young fellow Our Lady took this over, they could, or whoever could take it over, maybe the federal government in the end would want it, they could expand it as a service to First Nations for the out-of-print cultural books nationwide to begin with. Actually, I have a lot of books for Quebec and different, not a lot, but I have a sprinkling of books from all over Canada, but mostly I have definitive collections now for the Western regions. We'll see what happens. I'm just 65, as I noted.
Yeah.
And starting to slow down a bit. I have to develop a plan now, and I'm looking for a successor.
Yeah, so none of your kids want to do this?
No, they're all busy at their own, as it turns out, social advocacy kind of lifestyles.
Yeah. So where do you see this? Well, I guess it's a project, isn't it? Where do you see this going, and what would you like to see with it done with it?
Well, I wish to retire so I can do some traveling. I guess I can't be too focused upon exactly where it's going to go. I would like to find somebody like myself who enjoys it, who's at a value-based industry. It's a business. It's not necessarily that profitable, although maybe if they ran it a bit more better than I can, they would make a better living at it than I've been able to make. The overhead is very high, you see, because you have to constantly buy rare books for 50 First Nations, and you always be searching. They're not always cheap. Or if you like, the carbon footprint or the time put into finding them is not small. So you're looking at a very, like, I work 7 days a week. I just chip away at this in the evenings all the time. My dad did too. He taught me how to work. You have to really be able to put your energy into it. Maybe a smarter person would hire and could get some more capital and overhead and could get a shop and could get some professionals working. He and I always worked hard on a personal level and hired not very many people.
Yeah, and I mean, you mentioned it already, finding the right person, because you need to have the knowledge. Not just of books, but of this place.
Of BC?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Like BC, and this is why your collection so impresses me, because BC is a complicated place, just its politics is complicated, but within that, the First Nations are really complicated, because we've got 200 of them, and it's really, they're all different, they're all unique, they're all on their own, they've all had a different history. You go one valley has a different history, the Robson Valley has a The Upper Thompson has a different history than the Lower Thompson, where the Shuswap people are. The Upper Thompson is the Simp. I've worked, supplied them for years. You go to the Upper Thompson, becomes whole different again. There's many carrier up this way, and all the borders are fluid or being negotiated or talked. All of these things, there is no borders. It's all up to people to define that now, and there's a lot of overlap, but all that takes a lot of studying. So I'm to the point now, I would really like to train somebody to do this. You can take the BC political part and all those books. And I've got a ton of them, like that Strathcona book I sold you there. I used to sell those to the schools. Remember, the first 20 years I've been doing this, I sold predominantly to schools in British Columbia. The First Nations weren't ready then for big libraries. They bought some.
Yeah.
They've just swung into higher literacy levels. Like, I'm going to talk about that, too. It's important when you're talking about First Nations, there's two types of literacy. Cultural literacy and traditional literacy, you have to have, and they've got that. And then the new thing to cope with this new world is English. Reading English, having all the books about you, that's a whole different new culture you have to learn. And stepping into both worlds is a huge job for each First Nation, and I work with them on that, just to bring the books all in one day.
Yeah. And so you mentioned you used to supply schools, but again, budgetary constraints, prevented schools from buying books, right?
Well, actually, I was the first one to go around with Aboriginal books to the schools. That was 23 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, oh, yeah, we do need First Nation books. We've got a lot of First Nations. There was no policy demanding it, except for grade 4 in those days. But the older grades, they all realized, hey, we need First Nation books. The place where I've done a lot of work is Merritt, BC, where there's a lot of cultural diversity, First Nations people, And they've always built up libraries with me in the Merritt area, for instance. That was on the school level. I was supplying them a lot of First Nations books. You know, to grab $1,000 out of a school budget is possible then, very hard now, because as you know, what's happened with schools, and this is a complicated picture for a different interview, their book budgets are down to probably 10% of what they used to be. And the reason for that is diverse, but mainly the number of children's gone down. The politics has not been supportive of a lot of books, to be quite honest about it. And there's a decline in book use of books and an increase in internet and online use with schools. Now they're realizing that's not the greatest. You need books to be able to read. You need a lot of books around you, too. So it's coming back. And First Nation budgets are coming back with new curriculum this year coming in for the secondary schools.
Yeah. I went into your collection last week, and on a cursory view of it, there's stuff there that you have that you couldn't Google, say. You couldn't find online.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, that's another story. Like, each book has a story. A certain number of them are out there. Then they go to the Internet and the Internet providers of books, which there are many booksellers in Louisiana. You can buy a book about Strathcona School, and they find it there for $1, and they put it up for $2. By the time you get it here, you're looking at $20. It's not always a cheap place to buy books, nor do you know what quality you're really getting. The hardest thing is to know what to order over the Internet. And a lot of people are guessing when they order over the internet. But that's what I do, is I order it, and I try and find it in good condition, and I bring it for them to inspect before they buy it. Very important to inspect a book before you buy it, because the content's got to be something you really need. You don't want something you don't need.
And just in terms of the information as well in those books, there's a lot of stuff in some of the books that you have there that you couldn't find online, like in terms of knowledge and information.
Right. Okay, so let's take the average book, BC book, let's take quite a quick one here, an older book that you have, like that, Recollections of...
Like I have that, the Men and Women of British Columbia.
Oh, the Men and Women of BC. Okay, that's probably online. I have an instant feeling for this that I'm usually right. That's probably online. It's probably very cheap because nobody really wants it. Because that's a biography of people done 40 years ago. That's done by Hancock House. David Hancock's a very good BC publisher who does, and he's considered very innovative. And that's a book that people might not really want because it's about many topics, many people. Another book you have there on Judge Begbie, the Red Book.
The Man for a New Country.
Now that's, again... that's a contentious book for the First Nations because he's the one who hung the guys, the Chilcotin warriors. But he's a part of our history, and that's got a certain bias. I can't sell that book too much because it doesn't have enough. It's more about the man than about the events. I do sell a lot of books about the Chilcotin War, anything I can find on the Chilcotin War, and I have many different aspects of that covered by books, is of huge importance because that was a conflict which people are still debating and still working on. They're still looking for the graves at New Westminster. And the Chilcotin people, I've had had many talks with them, and they've actually told me things about the war that are not in any book. Mm. And that's when you're really having a great day. But back to your question, what is on the internet? You can get a feel, almost all the books you have here, for instance, don't want to make you feel like you can, they are probably about $5 to $10 on the internet.
Because they're not... The Canadian political books.
They're not much wanted. They're out of print, but everybody's got one who needs one, which is not the libraries because they've got one or thrown it out because it's not being used. But good on you for valuing it. Like all the books on Trudeau books, people still want about Trudeau's father. And MacDonald, they don't much want MacDonald or Mackenzie King, Nobody wants Mackenzie King. Forget about that guy.
Yeah.
So you have to go by that. And then you have the value of the man. For instance, I'll tell you a very valuable book. This will surprise you. Tommy Douglas, signed Tommy Douglas, is a collectible. Mm. You're looking at least $500 for a sign. He didn't sign many books.
Yeah.
He voted the most popular man in Canada. I've heard some of them sold for up to 1,000. I don't sell many. I've got two right now by happenstance.
Yeah.
We'll advertise them on the radio program here. Yeah. But I'm not going to sell them for that. But they're a rare thing because they're signed. But basically, political books are one of the most unsaleable, and I'm not collecting them at all anymore. What's rare and hard to find are the ethnographies. about the First Nations people that were done, published usually through American universities, and they were limited numbers published. Even UBC press books become fairly scarce fairly soon because there's not a big press run, and everybody, the libraries have it, and then they remain to them, and then they become scarce. I mean, they just few of them around. There's quite a few really fine UBC press books about Aboriginal fishing rights, which I can't get right now. They've gone to astronomical price that I can't even buy them.
Yeah.
So it gets to be a point where it's really, really hard to get a book for me to access them cheap enough. I don't want to pay hundreds of dollars for a book. Then I have to charge double that at least.
Yeah.
And nobody wants it because it devastates their budget. So it's a real art to get this stuff cheap enough. It's really, really hard for me to access it inexpensively enough. And that's what's the hard work. You can find this stuff, sure, order it online, but you've got to find it relatively inexpensively. And that's really the talent that I guess I've developed and that I want to teach my successors, how to buy the book, 50 sets of books for these 50 groups, you know, Carrier, Sakani, Teltan, and then how you sell them. And that's, they might have a better plan than I do, but I've gone to visit the folks. And I'm going up to Okanagan, Kelowna, West Bank Museums next week. I'll go down to Osoyoos. I'll go to Kelowna or Keetlauna, means grizzly bear. And I'll have a great time because I know those guys fairly well, and I've got a good set of books for them. And I even yak away in a little, like I'm really proud to know the word Keetlauna, which is actually the name of a chief there in Osoyoos area. But I'm going to go down and have now almost all the books written about them.
So what's your year like in terms of how many days you're on the road and how many days you're at home, say?
About 2 months, 2.5 months. I try and package the trips so that I'm seeing one or two First Nations every day. I used to go away for a month up to the Skeena, and I'm going to go up there now. Probably I'll go there for 3 weeks. I've got it down now to not wasting any time, and I even see three First Nations in a day and see if they have any funding. I'll go see Gitsilas First Nation and in the Smithers area. I'll also go to see Metlakatla this year. I hope to go see Gitgat, or try and get out to see groups around Prince Rupert, Nakwa Lams. I'm going, Fort Simpson used to be the name for that very large group, and they're in the middle of LNG negotiations. And guess what? I have some good books that are about the technical aspects of LNG, not just political. I also bring technical things that are of value for what people are doing, which is trying to understand LNG, trying to understand fisheries. I'll even have books on eelgrass because, eelgrass is incredibly important. I've read a lot about that in my past career in fishing. Eelgrass is where the lingcod hang out. And there's two or three books that have a nice little chapter on eelgrass. So I'll be taking that up to Lakwa Lams in this next month or two. In 6 weeks, I'll be headed up there, and I'll go all the way through the Skeena Valley. That's a nice trip. There's a lot of books written for or by about people of that area, and their history is since the Delgamuuk, and culture's very much alive up there, and languages are pretty much alive, and they've written, and Barbeau was an early ethnographer who wrote, and William Bainan was a native ethnographer. There's quite a nice set of books for there. I'll have a great time there. That'll be a good run for me.
Is there part of the province that you haven't been?
No, I really... I went to Teltan, which is a Dease Lake, last fall. I've been there twice. There's really nowhere I don't like too bumpy a road.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for the road to Bamfield to get paved, because I do a lot of work in the West Coast. I've been to Tassis. I've been to Zabalas, which is a bit bumpy. Don't really want to go there with a heavy load or meet a logging truck. Oh, I've met many a logging truck on this. But no, I'm looking for paved roads because I have fairly heavy load.
You're carrying all the books with you as you travel, right?
Well, so, they're sorted for, when I go for the Skeena Valley, they're sorted.
Not all of the books, but yeah, you're bringing a.
When I go to the far north or to, I'll have the Métis are some of the hardest guys to find. Where are they? I've went to a few Métis settlements. I'm still trying to find the Métis. I go to some of their association meetings, and I'm looking forward to catching up with the Métis more. I have a lot of stuff, not only about Riel, but about Riel Métis culture and stuff. I have to find a home for that. Sometimes I sit on these books for years and years.
What do you, in terms of your own personal reading, what do you read?
I read ethnography, believe it or not. Yeah. I love reading old histories of culture, histories of people. I don't read much fiction. I like to read it's part of my work, but I also like it. And I'm always finding new ones, which I'm delving. I have more than enough to read, because I have to,
yeah.
I have to have a good handle on the content of all these things, and so that I can pull out a reference to New Westminster First Nation. A guy asked me for that the other day. I was able to, within 4 minutes, pull out a reference to where that reserve was laid out in the Fraser Valley and later cancelled. So I have to have, and I have to teach somebody, or maybe they'll come ready, trained from anthropology at UBC or somewhere like that, with a good background. But they'll also have to take a few lessons from you, because there's also a lot of political history that you have to know too. Like, the whole province evolved legally, politically. First Nations were very much a part of that. O'Reilly, the early are very important. Governor Douglas, I have many books about Governor Douglas, and I'm finding more about him all the time. He was good with a pistol, you know.
Yeah.
He was just like the Wild West when he was. Yeah. You'd be amazed the violence. He was almost killed several times by First Nations, and it was much more violent than people know. It was much more Wild
West.
You know?
Yeah, that's what we overlook, because we tend to think that history in this province is, you know, it's British and it's you know, it's elegant, say, or it's pretty much done, you know, legally or on paper, but it's not. It was quite a violent place. In DeCosmos' time, Douglas, you know.
DeCosmos, yeah. Oh, yeah, especially then. And there was a lot of ugly episodes that aren't in the history books. I hope to put them there.
Yeah.
And they drove the Haida people out of Victoria when the smallpox hit.
Mm-hmm.
That was what I call the Canadian Trail of Tears, when they were literally, we could call it genocide, and the introduction of the smallpox. I'm still looking for a reference on that. I've got a fellow who's found me one of the giving out of the smallpox blankets. If you listen to First Nations people, they'll tell you more history that's in the history books. And the Okanagan was there 2 years ago, and they said, oh, the Spanish came through here. I said, hey, that's what are you talking about? That's not any fishery in any book I've ever read. Lo and behold, last winter they found a musket up there. And they actually remember things through the oral record, where they went through Okanagan Falls and where they had the last battle with them. It's all remembered. The ethnologists and up there and the historians never thought it was a credible story to record. But I'm going to do it someday, because I believe in them and they're right. And I think the same thing happened on Vancouver Island. We had a lot of Spanish people mining, even exploring, getting shipwrecked, more than is in the, as you said, the British record.
Yeah.
British record is designed very much for people like my grandfather, who came from England, Oxford area in 1910. They wanted him to think that it was a peaceful, fine place where you could grow an orchard and make lots of money.
Yeah.
And with your capital, he didn't go that well for him at all. He actually lost his money pretty quick and had to cope, as a lot of people did, with a much more rugged economy. Got along well with the First Nations. He used to play lacrosse with the Squamish First Nation guys. Some of my dad did. So, but it's been packaged for us. History, I'm looking forward to Gene Barman and the stuff that is being done now about the less numerous peoples. I'm trying to put this in the right way. You were mentioning Filipino Canadians. There needs to be a book written now about Filipino immigration and histories here. I used to sell a lot of these to the high schools, but all of that, most history is unwritten or never gets written or gets forgotten.
Yeah.
A little bit, about 5%, maybe 10% gets in the book, and it can often be packaged by governments or by certain authors, establishment type authors. History of the First War, it goes on and on, you know. It's a big job to know what even happened. Historians have to read. I understand now what a huge amount historians have to know before they can write.
Mm-hmm.
They have to know all these obscure journals and then start writing stuff that other people have never read. So, it's a pretty great job. The greatest thing is when I get out with the First Nations and they hand me some dried moose meat. I was there once. They gave me some moose meat at Fort St. James, Nakadsli, a place I visit quite often. Very traditional carrier people there. I said, do you want some moose fat? I said, oh, I don't know if I could quite stomach that. Oh, no, just take some here. I said, you'll really like it. So I put this down in my van. I said, I have a little place where I have this munchable, tasty food, native food, which I've, of course, really... So I reached down. I was driving. I was hard of hunger, and I bit into this, and chewing on it for a while. It was really good.
Yeah.
And I realized it was straight moose fat smoked, and it was terrific. And so things like that make my day when you can learn that moose fat, you know, you should always smoke the fat and eat that too.
Yeah. What's the key then for someone who is a bookseller? I mean, the handling of having a handle on the content as well as knowing the material. I mean, that's key, isn't it?
Well, for any bookseller, yes. You have to know
the good booksellers.
The Hemingway books.
Yeah, yeah. The good booksellers that I've encountered know this stuff. I mean, you could just say, well, I want that book that I about, and they'd know instantly what.
Yes,
that
we're not very underpaid lot. First, say that we all have the equivalent of training of PhDs several times over. The pay we're getting is abysmal. I would put us down there at minimum wage if you took into account the long hours we put in on the weekends to keep up with their stock, reprice it, and get it out. However, that complaint now being registered on this interview,
yeah.
I'll just say that, yes, if you're selling on general stock on the street, which I have small skills in doing, but I know many people much better at it than I, you've got to know all what the first edition Hemingways are. Some of them aren't that expensive. They've got a little mark on the cover, it's the inside cover, and they're worth $40, not always expensive. You get the signed Hemingway, you're looking at $30,000, you know. But this is just general knowledge. I don't really want any more of that. This is a specific knowledge-based First Nations library provision business. The idea is to have enough books to build a whole library, as I did with the Niska, and I've done with the Shuswap Shuwepum, and I've done with probably six other groups over time. And that's the good day I've done it with at least 12 groups. I've built up libraries, Squamish, over years. I've built up a whole library. Suquamish, I still haven't pronouncing that quite right. I'm always struggling to get the pronunciation right it was just up at Tlayaman where I worked as a treaty negotiator in an earlier career, and I bring those guys' books too. A big background. I can say the word for clams up there, and quite a few other words. Most places I try and develop a bit of a at least say the word hello, like it's when you go up to see the Kwakwal. Getting along with my pronunciation slipping here. I'll have a glass of water. Kwakwakiwak, you say, Gila Kastla, hello. You got to give respect to the folks. They've had to say hello all these years. That's English. So I really work hard to say Tenze is what you say to Cree people, Tenze. And when you go up to see the far north, you see the Dogrib or Klisho people, you say Dante. You have to put the accent on the end of it. You got to remember all this stuff every time you... Dante, you got to say it right. And then this guy, maybe he knows his stuff. We better go see what he's got over there.
Yeah.
And then we start into a conversation and they buy a few books and maybe I get some... smoked moose meat from them too.
Well, David, what's the future in terms of our literacy with regards to history? I mean, are you hopeful that we will know our past?
I think we're whitewashing it and clicheing it down to a bunch of stuff. I think the Canada People's History CBC program really opened up a lot of eyes.
That mini-series from the
90s.
Yes,
they opened that. For instance, the Riel Rebellion, so-called, they put that into the context. I mean, they never should have killed Riel. He was a great creative guy, but it was a totally railroaded. So there's a lot of history that's not written up yet properly, accurately. So I think, literacy comes. Like, you can read a lot of books about BC politicians. All of our BC politicians have a story. And you need to catching up with them. But in terms of literacy, it's making it saleable and readable, like Jean Barbin does with many different groups,
mm-hmm.
and not just the British. And it's getting away from just the British. Now we have Chinese Canadians coming in big time, and there's not enough focus on that. I have carried the Chinese Canadian books. I have almost all of them. But there needs to be many more compared to the number of Chinese Canadians in Canada. They're quite good. They're quite academic. There's just so few of them. Something's wrong there. There needs to be much more work done there.
David, when you think of these years of collecting books, I mean, you encounter gems, obviously. In terms of rare books and books of great value, I mean, what have you got that's worth discussing?
I don't really get antiquarian books. No, I'm not looking for them. One of the rarest ones I have now, though, is McMenzie's Journal of Vancouver's Journal. It's like Vancouver kicked around, came up the coast here, 1792, anchored off Point Grey. Well, it was Menzies was his botanist, and he had a separate journal. So in Menzies's journal, it has a description of the village at Tawasin. Actually, it was a big reef net site. I was just over to see the Saanich peoples over there, and they were very interested in this, because this is proof of claim, if you like, of Fraser River salmon harvest by this reef net method, and of the numbers of people that went over there. And they're looking to develop that method of fishing, which is a lift method, a very selective, good method of fishing. So it's bringing that history back, that way of fishing even back, which is carried on in the United States, but not Canada. So I found that book, and it's not on the internet. It's rare enough not to be on the internet anymore. I didn't quite get to finishing my explanation there. Some books eventually go off the internet because there's so few of them.
Yeah.
That's when you get into really valuable books, hard to find books. I have maybe 5% of my stock is like that. It's completely off the internet. And this is one of them. So this is looking for a home now. It's published by the Queen's Printer, I think, but they didn't publish very many.
Yeah.
And so, or by the Parliament, I think. It's an early, early book published in BC. So that's a gem I've got now, mostly for the content, again, because Vancouver was under high stress. I have his journal, too, and I know where to get one without paying $20,000 or $400. I've got one I sell for $400, which is his journal's verbatim, which takes you around the Strait of Georgia when he met the Spaniards. So, again, it's not the scarcity. I'm trying to get the content, trying to make it affordable, and trying to find the references the First Nations want, because this my business is all about. Again, it's a library provision business in its best, or a provision of the key cultural books, which is the focus of it. And also I'm going to be supplying some regional libraries, I hope, again, when they get buying stuff, because they're not buying it. They're buying a lot of vampire stuff right now. There's a lot of overly popular books which are dominating the market. I got all kinds of agendas I could give to you. But yes, I think there'll be a good future in this book business, First Nations book business, and literacy and Canadian history is going to be good, but we need more of certain things.
Yeah, and so people can contact you at that email address I gave off the
top. Yes, thanks very much for that, Joe. I really appreciate that.
DavidEllis@lightspeed.ca.
Yep.
And if people have questions about certain books, they can certainly ask you, and you can point them in the right direction, I'm sure. The email again, DavidEllis@lightspeed.ca. David, thanks so much for coming in to do this, and thanks again for the books that you sold me last week. I enjoyed your collection a great deal walking through that.
Well, we talked about a lot of things. It was good.
Yeah. David Ellis joined me in person here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.